Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Despite the Labor Day holiday, it was a busy weekend for the city of Boston. 36 protesters were arrested on Saturday during a straight pride rally and parade, where protesters vastly outnumbered rallygoers. Some of those protesters were arraigned in Boston Municipal Court today. We'll have more from the courtroom proceedings later this hour, but first, to talk about Saturday's clashes, as well as some other major news for the city, is Boston Mayor Marty Walsh. Mayor Walsh, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me today.
Hey, let's start there, Mayor Walsh. Were you happy with how the situation was handled on Saturday?
No, I mean, first of all, I was not happy at all that this so-called straight pride parade came to Boston. That's something that I would prefer not to come to our city. We're a city that is very open and respectful to each other. And to have this organization come in, we knew that was going to bring some counter-protests that were going to happen. One of the things that I think first and foremost when that parade, even though, I mean, they have a First Amendment right to be able to go in and march down Boylston Street. I would love to see them not come here, but unfortunately I have no way to keep them out of Boylston Street and keep them out of marching here. If I could, I would. I know that if we went to court, that would have been thrown right back at me in about 2 seconds. That order would have been reestablished. So in watching what happened around the country in different cities, particularly in Charlottesville a couple of years ago, I wanted to make sure that people that came to counter-protest, if you will, or be able to say their piece, that they were able to do it in safety and that we weren't going to have problems. That was the whole intention of making sure that we had plenty of police protection out there and people out there. We didn't just have police out there. We had EMS out there and fire out there, too, to make sure that people were safe. What happened was all of this, I guess, counter-protesting and protesting led to 36 individuals being arrested as part of the parade. The parade appeared in court today. The charges range from assault and battery with a dangerous weapon, some on police officers, to carrying dangerous weapons, to resisting arrest, disorderly conduct. There were a lot of organizations and groups that came in that were looking to disrupt the event, and I can't necessarily say I blame them, but you can't do it violently. But there were other organizations that came to express their opinion, too, and they're not being spoken about or being brought up right now because they did it in a different manner, and I think that's something that I'm afraid of. But what I'm concerned about the most or upset about the most is that the straight pride organizers, what they want to see is division between people is their goal. And that's exactly what they're starting to see now. And you know, our values in Boston is inclusion, acceptance, love. No, we need to make sure that we continue to do that. We continue to pass that message along and let people know that we are a parade, a great city. The best parade in our city, some of the best parades, one of the best, is Gay Pride. And I'm proud to march in that parade every year. We don't have problems in that parade. There's no issues in that parade. It's about love and respect. And that's what we have to continue to be pushing for.
Mayor Walsh, you know, there have been conflicting reports about what happened on Saturday. You mentioned the 36 arrests for protesters, some, you know, with charges as strong as assault and battery. There were also videos of police using pepper spray. Police seem to be in riot gear. How does one balance the various public safety concerns, both of the people participating and law enforcement? And did Boston get that balance right on Saturday?
It's a very difficult balance, a dedicated balance, and I think that, you know, my goal was to make sure that no one was seriously hurt on Saturday, and so as far as that, we got it right. A lot of folks turned on the police, too, because they couldn't get to the Straight Pride parade, and I think that's unfortunate, and I think that, you know, I think we all need to kind of take a step back here and evaluate what we're doing. And I think the fact that I think there's one unanimous piece of this all is that myself and a lot of the counter-protesters, we all have the same goal that we certainly don't agree with the message that the so-called straight pride is spewing out there. And it's something that I don't believe at all. And I think a lot of people that came in on Saturday to counter-protest that feel the same way. And I think that, you know, again, when it, you know, I guess I could be judged a second. We can all be second guessed all day long. But if somebody lost their life on Saturday, we'd be criticized for not having enough police protection out there and not having enough protection. Unfortunately, we needed it Saturday, and it was there. And you know, I know there's a lot of conversation around misconduct, and it was a misconduct. And certainly, we take any complaint about police misconduct seriously. And the commissioner also does as well. And if there's something out there, an incident that happened, I mean, you can't get a full vision of what's going on a 20-second clip on a video. You just can't. There's things that happened before that lead up to that. So you just can't get a full assessment of what's happening. I do know that when you have 36 arrests at any type of protest, there's a lot going on in that particular time.
So, Mayor Walsh, what we're talking about here is a kind of particular phenomenon with the Straight Pride Parade, where we have really more people protesting the parade than participating in the parade itself. But it's not the first time we've seen this in Boston. In 2017, that was similar.
I wouldn't say we're protecting the parade. I think we're protecting
individuals. No, protesting.
There was a lot of people on the sidelines, too, that were protesting and just letting their voices be heard.
Yeah, that's. I think I just misspoke. I meant more people protesting.
They weren't trying to push police. They weren't going after police. And they weren't trying to, I don't know if anyone was trying to cause bodily harm, but there was a lot of people that definitely showed no signs of wanting to hurt somebody. And I think that's a concern of ours as well. And I'm just glad no one was seriously injured as a result of what happened on Saturday.
One more question on this. Are there lessons that Boston or other cities need to begin to learn where we've got these kinds of marches or rallies that may be wildly unpopular in a city, but going forward and lots of people turning out to protest them?
It's hard to say. I mean, the last time we had an event like this was a couple of years ago on Boston Common, where we had folks coming in and wanted to express their freedom of free speech. We had 44,000 counter-protesters. 44,000 that day, most people that came to counter-protest were peaceful. They were upset with the messages being said. And then there was some other folks in there that were causing disruption. And I think that, you know, those are things that I get concerned about as mayor. My job at night is to make sure when I go to bed that people are safe, whether they're coming to express themselves. I don't have to agree with everyone's position. People don't agree with everything that I say or what I do, but I need to make sure people go home safe. I can't have a situation like we had in Charlottesville where a young woman was at a protest and got run over by a car because some guy decided to drive a car through a crowd of people and could have killed a dozen people. And I can't have that happen in the streets of Boston. We've learned by watching Charlottesville. We've learned by watching different shootings in different parts of the country with barricades and fences and blocks. It's unfortunate. We learned from the marathon bombing about how to put on large-scale events in the city. It's unfortunate that as the world we live in today, and we're talking about America here. We're not talking about some country that's concerned about the violence in it. We're talking about America. So I'm concerned about all those things, and I think it's unfortunate that in some cases we've come to this. We've come to the point where we have to have so much precaution to keep people apart that people can't have disagreements and arguments over whatever the issues are. But that's just the time that we're living in today.
We're talking to Boston Mayor Marty Walsh, and in a second we'll discuss last week's settlement with Airbnb. But first I want to ask you about another story that's emerging. On Friday, John Lynch, an employee of the city's development agency, was charged with taking $50,000 in bribes to secure a permit for a real estate developer. First, what are your reactions to the story, and how do you address concerns that Boston's real estate industry may have too much influence during this real estate development boom?
Well, I don't know if that question you just asked kind of goes along with each other, because it appears like, first of all, I'm concerned about what happened Friday. I found out late Friday. The real estate, your question was about the real estate having too much influence. This case, and again, I'm still trying to figure out exactly what was happening there. It seemed like the real estate company didn't have any ability or didn't know exactly how to move forward here in the permitting process, which I'm upset about. We've reached out to the U.S. Attorney's Office to learn more about the situation and determine if any further action needs to happen on our end. And I expect every single member of the Zoning Board of Appeal to look at cases impartially. And to my knowledge, that's how they conduct themselves. And we are going to work on any impropriety and deal with it swiftly. But certainly was very upset on Friday and very concerning to me when I heard that.
Mayor Walsh, in other major news from last week, the city reached a settlement with Airbnb to regulate short-term rentals. The agreement includes a ban on investor units, which is the unit has to be primary residency. This was obviously a negotiation, the city, Airbnb. What was one thing you felt was crucial to make sure made it in that final deal and one thing you had to give up that you were hoping to include?
Well, I think two key parts of the settlement is Airbnb will now assist Boston's short-term rental registry, letting users know Boston's rules and working with hosts to register their units. Airbnb will also share their user information with the city of Boston. That's key, so we know exactly how many units we have in the city of Boston. And Airbnb also, secondly, will remove listings from illegal short-term rental websites upon the city's request. So I think that that's another piece that's really important to this whole piece. The city of Boston's short-term rental regulations allow for growth of Boston's home-sharing industry, but it protects affordable housing in our neighborhoods. And I think the key piece of this is in the last, you know, over the last, since my administration, we've built 30,000 new homes, some of them low-income, some of them moderate, some high-income. And what we're doing, we're still finding people that are coming up against it, particularly around trying to find affordable housing to live in Boston's neighborhoods. And I'm hoping that this will turn some rental units back onto the market for people to be able to live in our neighborhoods. Some of these units that were being built, but also taken off the market, going to Airbnb. And that's not the intention when we supported them. So I'm hoping the biggest thing out of all this was that we'll see more rental units return back to the market.
So, Mayor Walsh, all negotiations are give and take. Was there anything that you wanted included in the deal that ultimately wasn't?
I think we worked with the city council initially with the ordinance to pass the ordinance, and we went back and forth there a little bit on that side of it. But when we finally came up with a final ordinance passed by the council, signed by me, the next was the court settlement. And I think that we didn't really give anything. I think we received a couple of important aspects that we're looking for. I think sharing user information with the city of Boston, Airbnb, is key because that was a sticking point that Airbnb did not want to do that in the very beginning. And I think that that's important. And removing listings from illegal short-term rentals is also important because you'll see a lot of housing units return back on the market for families to be able to rent for 30 days rather than for a night.
So you mentioned earlier, and you've mentioned in the past, concern about balancing people's ability to participate in the short-term rental market with the effect that it can have on housing costs. Housing's a major issue in the greater Boston area. Do you have any remaining concerns about how to balance the participation in short-term rentals with making sure housing remains affordable in the city?
Well, I think we're going to look at the data now as we move forward here in the next couple of months and analyze the data to see exactly what the impacts are on the Boston market. And I can't speak to greater Boston, but I think that one thing I know is very clear. There's still a huge need for housing in not just Boston or greater Boston, but Massachusetts. And I think that when I talk about housing, I'm talking about middle-class housing, housing people can afford, low-income housing. Those investments need to continue to be made. And in light of having we have no federal investment going on in this area at all, it's all falling back on the city and the state, in the cities, I should say, not just Boston, the cities and towns in the states to come up with some creative ways to build housing. Because right now, without a federal housing plan and no money going into housing for poor people, that burden is the burden of being poor and trying to find a home is shifted over to the city in cities and towns to create more housing.
I'd love to get to one more subject before you have to go, Mayor Walsh. Somerville Mayor Joe Cotertoni recently announced here on BUR that the city is going to open a supervised consumption site. And then last week we spoke with Boston City Councilor Anissa Saibi George. She had a little bit different view on supervised consumption. Let's listen to that, please.
When we think about the millions of dollars that it costs to open one site, I want to invest those in actions that we can do today and tomorrow to save lives. And through harm reduction, through safe needle exchange, through a better distribution of methadone and Suboxone, and really providing the mental health services and the housing needs and the other supportive services that individuals who are in crisis need, we can help them find recovery.
So one saying, hey, we're going to do it. Another saying there are better immediate investments. Where do you come out on supervised consumption?
Well, I think there's no number we can put as far as investment in people's lives. I believe that safe consumption sites have shown to be a harm reduction model worth exploring. I went to Canada early this year and traveled and saw safe consumption sites where they're legal in some areas of Canada. What it does, it keeps somebody alive long enough to hopefully at some point get that person into recovery. I think the model that Canada has is a very different model than what Joe Curtatone's going to put on probably, or myself. The issue in Canada, or the benefit of Canada, it's all paid for by the government, national government, and by the local government. Right now, safe consumption sites in Massachusetts, in America, are illegal. We have a U.S. Attorney's office that came out and said they're going to fight them, and they're illegal. They don't have to fight them. They're illegal. We'd have to figure a way of how do they get paid for? How do you cite them? So I think that it's an option worth exploring. I think every option is worth exploring to deal with the opioid epidemic that we have. And safe consumption sites is one of them. There's no question about it. It keeps people alive long enough to help to get them into treatment. The people that use them, not everyone uses them, by the way, just people that you can't force somebody into, just like you can't force somebody into recovery, you can't force somebody into a safe consumption site.
Speaking of recovery, September is National Recovery Month, and your office announced last month a series of events you're going to do as part of it. What's your most important goal over the next few weeks when it comes to addiction and recovery?
Well, I think there's a lot of important goals. I think letting people understand that addiction is a disease. You know, when people are struggling with drugs and alcohol, it's a disease. And I think that looking at that issue as a disease rather than a nuisance is important. I think that number one. I think number two, we're working on policies here in the city and making investments. Our budget, we increased our Office of Recovery Services budget by 35% this year in the budget, reaching out to folks who are looking for assistance. I think people need to understand as well that when people drive by and they see an addict, somebody who's struggling with a substance abuse disorder, they're sick. They need help. But we also can't force them into treatment. And that's one of the hardest things I think that we all deal with, is that if you have a loved one at home and you're trying to get them help, if they're not willing to go for help, you can't force them into it. So what we have to do is make sure that we have the help available. One of the things that we're trying to do is build the bridge back to Long Island so that we can have a long-term recovery beds on Long Island. That's the one area that there's a major gap in recovery right now. We have people that can get into, we can pretty much get people into detoxes. Those detoxes last anywhere from 5 days to 14 days, maybe 30, depending on insurance. Then it's really making sure we have these long-term recovery beds that people can take the next step on. If they're not available, these folks, people who are struggling, have no place to go. And what happens is if it's like anybody, if you're trying to get better from a sickness, you need medicine and rest, and these folks need the medicine and rest that are provided in halfway houses.
That's Boston Mayor Marty Walsh. We hope we'll have an opportunity to talk to you more about this subject later this month. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Talk to you soon.
Thanks.
All right, bye-bye.
Stay with us. I'm Tiziana Deering. There's more Radio Boston ahead.